Welcome everybody back to another episode of Stripped Raw. This is part three. We've been through two other phases, if you will, before military, during the military, and now we're about to get into after military with Preston. So we're joined here. We got Preston and we have Cam Cam. And I'm going to say, Preston, looks like you're sitting in your car, which is awesome. I know you're in the great state of Maryland.
Oh, yeah.
It's pretty cold there, just like it is here. So you're probably trying to keep your toes warm.
I know
you got a lot of kids. I appreciate you finding some solitude wherever you can. Sometimes we have to do that, find the peace in whatever places we can find it in. I understand that 100%. What I do want to shout out is you got a huge hat on right now, and it is glowing. Tell us about the hat. I know in parts one and part two, part one for sure, you're talking about how you found church and you found God.
Yeah.
Hit us up on that. What's the deal?
So
obviously you made that for us, I would say.
Yeah, I've actually had this hat for several months now, but you know, I've told y'all about my faith kind of journey. It's been up and down the whole time, and you know, I beat myself up and all that. But you know, this past year has been kind of hard for me on a faith based kind of idea. But I was trying to figure out like how can I reach people without being so like, you know, explicit and like in their face kind of thing. Cause you know, I got a little bit of introvertedness. I don't like to talk to random strangers, especially about something big, like talking about Jesus and stuff like that. But in the moment I can, but anyways, I was praying about it. And these words came to my mind and I was like, man, I'd really love to make a hat or make a brand out of it. Like this is what I wanted to do. So basically went to Walmart, bought a hunting hat, and I got a big Sharpie, and I put on here, Jesus wants you. And you should see the faces people make when they do that, like, 1,000-yard squint trying to read what it says, yep. And then you can see, like, the puzzled look on their face. And I can only imagine, like, what's going through their head. Like, why would Jesus want me? Why is that idiot wearing a bright orange hat with, you know, scribbled writing on the top? You know, whatever they're thinking, I don't mind. I just like to get people's gears turning. That's something I always enjoy. But, you know, like I told y'all before, I'm a faith-based person. I don't think I'd be here breathing air. I don't think I'd have my kids. I don't think I'd be in the situations that I am now had I not been blessed with what Jesus has given me. And the reason I wear this hat is to show my faith and show my confidence in my faith towards others. And, you know, everybody's out here. Everybody's got their drip. You know what I mean? I'm using some terms I'm not
drip.
Comfortable. Yeah, their drip.
That's coming from your kids right there. The
yeah,
drip.
that's from the Gen Alphas. They're like, yeah. You dripping, Dad? I'm like, what? I got something on me? Like, what are you talking about? They're like, nah, you're drip. Like, what you're wearing? I'm like, oh, we called that swag back in
all
my
the
day.
All the 26 and unders are doing this.
So, yeah. So this whole skibbity and all this other stuff, like, I am so, like, I thought what I said in the 90s and early 2000s was bad, but this is on a whole nother, like, speaking Greek kind of thing. So I kind of feel like I'm old now. So yeah, I feel old. But yeah, this hat is just a statement I like to make. You know, everybody wears their own thing out in public, so this is my way of just saying, hey, look, you know, I'm not afraid to say I'm a follower of Jesus. And you know, I always try to tell people that talk to me about it. You know, I've had a few people question me, like, why do you wear that hat? Or, you know, that's a really cool hat. Where can I get one? I'm like, well, actually, I made it. You know, tell them how I made it and stuff. But my thing is, like, I tell people that I'm not a churchian. And they're like, whoa. I'm like, what do you mean a churchian? I'm like, you think about it. You're pushed into going to church and being this, you know, perfect person and all this. And that's just not what was taught by Jesus in the Bible. And I tell people, like, it's not a religion, it's a relationship, because there's, I don't know, like 60, 70 different, like, flavors of Christianity that's out there.
Yep.
Which one's right? Which one's wrong? I don't know. But I know there's a Bible that you can read, and that's what I go off of. And I rely on my relationship with Jesus and what he tells me and what prayers are answered and what struggles I go through. I think that's one of my favorite things is, you know, my life, if anybody's listened to the first two parts of this, you'd probably think, man, how is this guy even still like breathing air and he's not wrapped up in an insane asylum somewhere? I owed a lot of credit to like my faith in Jesus get me through that, because I didn't have the strength to get through it on my own. There were times where I literally would be crying my eyes out to the weakest point of my life. And that's what we're going to go over here today is this is the probably the darkest moment for me anyways, as far as my faith journey and just the struggle I went through with losing the Marine Corps and losing my physical ability and many other things. So yeah.
Yeah. So if we were to recap, Cam, you went over the last thing, the last two episodes. Hit us with it.
Yeah, we're basically just making our way through Preston's life and the struggles that kind of built him to this point. And we did his early childhood with the injuries and the being around drugs and addiction himself. And then the Waffle House story really stuck with me. I keep thinking about that. And then made our way up to this point and where he met his wife and started having kids and how that took there's great times, but
the madness that ensued with us.
And last episode, we kind of broke into, because I just did a review before this one. It's been a little bit since we recorded. We kind of broke into more like just discussion towards the end of it, like the last 15 minutes, which was really cool. Kind of just Preston and Fred stating facts and talking about it. So now we're going to work on I guess this is still early and mid Marine Corps and then getting out and how you've handled it and what you've gone through.
Absolutely. All right.
Phase three. All right, Preston, hit us with it. Seatbelts on. I'm going to put my helmet on too.
Here, leave my seatbelt on. Here we go.
Yep. All right.
So we're mid Marine Corps. So I probably already stated I started to have several kids at this point. You know, I met my wife, Brooke. We met on eHarmony. We knew each other for 3 months. We got married 3 months later. At like 3 months time frame, we were married. We were young. We had our first kid by 21. My first son was diagnosed with autism at 2. Had my daughter at about a year or so later. She ended up having to go to the NICU. She was in the NICU for 52 days. She had to have her kidney removed. And that was a very trying time. Fast forward after that, that's when... Now, did I speak about my dad on the previous...
Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay. All right. So 2014 came around. That's when, you know, I basically found my father who had passed away in his sleep. Went through a lot of grief therapy during that time and really struggled with my faith and everything. But almost a year, 9 months later, I got saved after my dad had passed away. We ended up having a third child, which I named after my son or after my father. Little word of advice, I don't recommend that because it's weird. It's like they turn into that person. I don't know. It's weird. Yeah. My third son is like my dad, and it's kind of scary how he acts. He's just a funny guy, and he's always messing around. I forget what it's called, but he can say stuff just like that and catch you real off guard. But anyways, so I had my son, and then I ended up at this time I was still at Parris Island. I was teaching on the rifle ranges. Ended up getting orders to Camp Pendleton, and that's a whole other side of the country. From Camp Pendleton, I served with it was another deployable unit. It was 1-2. Or I'm sorry, not 1-2, it was 1-4. 1-2 was in Camp Lejeune. 1-4, we went on another MU, so I went on a MU with them. On that deployment is where things really started to turn for the worse for me. And in a very unexpected and unplanned and just had no idea it was going to happen. So I'm on this deployment. I am really, really faith-based at this point. Like I'm having guys, like I was trying to be the lay leader. I didn't get to do it before because you got to get to be a lay leader is basically the chaplain's right-hand man. But I didn't get certified before I joined. We got on that deployment. But anyways, I was working with the chaplain on the ship. I had guys coming up to me asking me to pray for them. People coming up to me telling them their wives were leaving them, their mothers were passing away with cancer, and just all these real huge things. And I just felt like, man, I don't feel like I'm the person to, you know, talk to about this. Like, you need to go see Chaps. But these people, like, they were complete, like, they were random people, but I knew them. I saw them in passing and stuff, and I didn't directly serve with some of these guys, but you know, I was having Bible studies. I was waking up every morning, going on the edge of the boat and just looking at the sunrise, man. Nothing like it. I'm 20 feet from the water. Like, if I fell off that boat, I'd be in the middle of the ocean somewhere. And I would wake up in the mornings and I would just go out and just be thankful for life, thankful for the air, thankful for the sun coming up. And I would be out there praying and reading my Bible and stuff. So this deployment, nothing happened. I probably already disclosed this in the very beginning. I was infantry for 8 years, 8 months, and 8 days, but the cards that I was dealt and the orders I was given, I never went into combat. And that right there, like, that was a big thing I've battled with, not being able to serve my purpose. I was an infantryman. But later, as I talked to the guys that I served with previously who did go to other units and stuff, they said, man, I would wish I was in your shoes. I wish I hadn't seen the horrors of war and some of the things that I've done. So I count that as a blessing for me, because that could have been the nail in the coffin for me on a mental health side of things. Like, there probably could have been things I wouldn't have been able to deal with, and God kind of lined it up for me to where I didn't have to get exposed to that.
So was this
your first deployment
with kids, yeah, and stuff? So where you had to leave the family behind?
No. So I had done a deployment previously with just two kids. I only had one kid. Yeah, I had one kid on one deployment. That was a 9-month deployment. It was terrible, but it was not fun. And it was on a boat too. So, you know, we were supposed to be the first responders for Benghazi, and some stuff was going on with Hezbollah and Israel and Hamas and all this stuff. We were supposed to be first responders too. We never went out on, it was like the maiden deployment for the USS New York. So it was really cool. It was a really sentimental deployment. Got to see all kinds of stuff I never thought this, you know, hillbilly from Kentucky would ever see. But it was fun, but also kind of nerve-wracking all in the same sense. But on this deployment, this next deployment, this was 2017. Basically, I was on the deployment for several months, and I was working out one day, and I was doing tricep extensions with a 55-pound dumbbell, just kind of give you an idea of what's going on. And all of a sudden, my arms, like, gave out on me. I ended up dropping the weight, and my arms went like noodles to my side. And I was like, what in the world? And I was looking like, what's wrong with my arms? I thought I'd like really just put myself to a weak point. Ended up not being able to move my arms at all. Like, I couldn't scratch my nose, like nothing. I couldn't move. My arms were just like to my side. So I scurried my little butt down to the med bay on the ship. And I talked to this lieutenant. I'll never forget his name, Lieutenant Skilton. And he was a flight surgeon. But I talked to him and I was like, yeah, I can't move my arms. He's like, what do you mean you can't move your arms? And I told him what happened. He basically said to me, he said, dude, this is not good. It's like, what do you mean? He's like, no, this is not good. We're sending you home. And so I ended up getting medevac from that deployment. The biggest thing that happened for me leaving the ship to getting home was when they had to take me to a foreign military, or not a foreign military, a foreign country to go to a hospital in that country. I was in Bahrain. They basically needed to perform an EMG. And if you're not familiar with what an EMG is, basically they have a needle that they stick in your muscle, and that needle has an electronic or electrical current going through it. And they have a little sheet that gives you readings. I went into this medical facility. Once everything got approved, I was escorted in by the Navy guys that was doing the medical side of things. And then next thing I know, I'm getting kind of liaisoned with these foreign people that didn't speak English. And I had no one else with me. It was just me. So they took me back to this room. And this took me several years of therapy to really realize what was going on. And it only took me a few months to figure out what had happened. But basically, these two guys, these Middle Eastern dudes, one was a doctor, one was an attendant, whatever. They put me in this room, laid me on a table, and kind of told me what the procedure was going to be. in like some very broken English, and they said, you know, it shouldn't take too long, you know, whatever. They ended up going from the top of my neck, about right here, right behind my ear, all the way down to my left toe, toes, with a needle and doing an EMG. And, mind you, I had no idea what an EMG was, but basically they had stuck the needle in to where it hit bone, and they would turn the voltage all the way up to where I was in excruciating, like debilitating pain, the worst pain I'd ever felt in my entire life on a, like, that I could imagine. I didn't think anything of it because I thought this is the procedure. And I'm like, oh my God, I hope I never have to do this procedure again. Ended up getting flown back to the States. They had confirmed that I had an EMG, or I had a muscular thing going on. Went back to San Diego and was going to be seen by another neurologist, and he was going to perform an EMG. I panicked. As soon as I heard he was going to perform an EMG, I was like, nah, bro. Like, they already confirmed it. We don't have to do it anymore. And I was like, can you explain the procedure to me? He explained the procedure to me and said it should take anywhere from 5 to 10 minutes to complete. So that was my first kind of like red flag of what happened. Years later, I saw a therapist and I started describing to her what happened. She was like, you know, she asked me, she said, do you think that was right, what happened? And I said, no, I don't think it was. I think they tortured me. And she said, well, I think you're right. So I ended up, while I was in Bahrain, it was a 2.5 hour long procedure that they had done where they were basically torturing me. To a point where I was screaming on the table, like telling them I didn't want to do it anymore. And they're like, no, 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 more readings. And so anyways, they confirmed all this. I went to medical doctors. I had an unknown muscular condition, which they still don't know what it is. I've been under the needle more than I wanted to, or under the knife more than I wanted to. They still haven't confirmed anything. I've been to genetics, neurologist, you name it. That year was a fight with the VA. I ended up, by the grace of God, getting 100% permanent and total. So they basically said, hey, you're done. They processed me out. A couple months before I had gotten out, we had moved my family back to Maryland. We ended up getting a house here, which this is where we currently live. Basically, I'd sent my family home, and I had to return back to California for a few months to finish processing out and doing paperwork and stuff like that. Mind you, this whole year that I've been processing through the VA, I was falling down the stairs. I couldn't walk really on my own. There were ups and downs with it. I wasn't allowed to lift more than 3 pounds. I was defecating on myself. I was having night terrors and muscle spasms and just in debilitating pain. They ended up prescribing me a bunch of medications that, you know, I later found out were actually making the condition much worse. So after I moved my family back, one of my neighbors, I was finishing up closing down the house we were living in. One of my neighbors, I'm not going to say their name, but She was a staff sergeant who had gotten out of the Marine Corps, and her husband was still active duty. We had a good friendship with them, but they had mentioned to me, you know, hey, you should try medicinal marijuana. Now, mind you, I was still like processing out, so I was risking a lot at this point. But I was in so much debilitating pain, I was desperate. I had went over to her house, and her and her husband both convinced me to just try medicinal marijuana. I tried it. And, you know, people are going to give mixed reviews on this, and people are going to probably bash me for the whole medicinal marijuana thing, but I'll leave you with this. I'll just say I personally don't trust it, because just like any other medication out there, I personally believe that, you know, there's a good 90% of the people that are taking medications that probably don't need to, and there's a good 10% that absolutely need it.
Yeah.
You know, take that for what it's worth. I feel the same about medicinal marijuana. I've seen it work wonders on people's lives, and I've seen it work absolute hell and nightmares for me in my life. So opening myself up to medicinal marijuana a month or two before I got out, I became pretty much addicted. from that point forward, because it was the only thing that brought me out of the pain I was in. But I didn't realize at that point I was beginning to numb and I was starting to let stuff in. Basically, I'd gotten out and they processed me out. I got my DD-214, all this stuff. And I decided to take a cross country trip. I was going to ride a car all the way back from California to Maryland. So completely from one coast to the next. This is the moment where it's like I had lost all of my discipline. I had lost all of my accountability. I had lost all respect for everything. And, you know, I can blame the marijuana for really causing me to numb and be oblivious to what I was doing, which it was, but a lot of it was my choice. I'm a grown man at this point. I have three kids. Like, there's no excuse for me to make the horrible mistakes that I made in these next 3 years to come. I was desperate.
I think that's a pretty common thing, honestly, especially people getting out of the military. I've seen it, especially, I have two friends that got out of the Marines specifically, and it's that sheer cut from, you know, clean cut, everything is directed and written down to, oh, I'm free. And man, I've seen people go off the deep end. Personally, I can't imagine what, like, you know, Dave's been in a lot longer and known a lot more people than I have. And I think it's a pretty common, sad thing where people just kind of go off the ability to go off the deep end there.
It's like you lose your, it's like you lost everything that you have known. And up until that point, that was my dream. My dream was to be in the military. And then my dream further became, like, I wanted to be a Marine. I wanted to serve 20 years. I wanted to do bad things to bad people. I wanted to, you know, I was never an awards chaser. I just left it up to whatever I earn, I earn. You know, that's what I did. So I was really disappointed. Like, this was the pivotal moment to where I went into the darkest part of my life.
It was on the cross country trip.
This is where I started to feel this, like, independence I haven't felt in many, many, many years. And this was not an independence that I had felt while I was married. This wasn't an independence that I felt while I was serving. So I became very self-centered, and I blame a lot of it as on the pain and the depression and the many other things I was going through that were leading me to do that. But once again, I can blame it on 1,000 things if I wanted to. I can throw the blame everywhere I want. But in retrospect of looking back on everything, it was always a personal decision that I made. Everything that I did, I was mentally capable. I was mentally capable of making a big boy decision, but I was choosing not to.
Did you know that at the time, or is that afterwards?
I knew it at the time. I'm not going to play dumb. You know, I was playing dumb with myself. I knew I was making mistakes. I knew I was doing the wrong thing, but I was making choices that on the whole kind of like spiritual side of things, I really think there was a moment where I had let something dark into my life at this point. I had let my guard down for just enough time to really let something dark into just my thought process, and I was going with that. Just to kind of paint the picture for you what was going on, I went from a proselytizing people, basically talking to people about Jesus and, you know, stuff like that, to praying for them, doing these Bible studies with these guys and all this, to I completely just 180'd. I went from that to, like, listening to this vulgar rap music and all these things. Pornography got into the mix of it. I was just complete opposite of who I was or who I had been while I was in the Marine Corps. And I'm not going to say I didn't struggle with pornography in the first couple years. You know, I was in the Marine Corps and first couple years of marriage, you know, I struggled with that. And I later found out, you know, that's adultery, and, you know, looking at women and stuff like that, it's adultery. You don't want to, I don't want to undershadow that. I had an addiction that had started years prior to that with the kind of sexual addiction of things, which, you know, after I had gotten out, I really kind of cut off from my life. I stopped doing that. So I had done the cross country trip, and I had it was just like this, just driving through hell in a way. I really felt myself just kind of like just bleeding out of myself. And then when I got home, that's when things really got worse. At this point, I'm physically struggling because of this muscular condition that I have. My mental health is out the wazoo. Like, I had nothing. I was in the 2 or 3 years. So I got out in the beginning of 2018. So 18, 19, and then 2020. So 3 years, I was smoking so much weed that I was completely numb, that I was making my condition worse. I was defecating on myself. I was not waking up to pick my kids up from the bus stop, like the bus driver. Like, there were so many things that were going on that I could have gotten into some serious trouble with, you know, on the outside of things. But what was going on indoors was 1,000 times worse. I had lost total respect for myself, because I came to a point where I felt like I only got a few more years to live, and I had really kind of given up on myself.
Mm-hmm.
So much so that I was taking everything that I could imagine, from the marijuana to the prescriptions they were giving me, to just numb and just kind of just be here. I was just like a blob. And yeah, I never
spent. You were existing, not living. Existing. You were existing.
Yeah, exactly. So it took a lot. It took a lot of time away from my kids that I'll never get back. Worse than what a deployment. Worse than what a regular, like 04 in the morning to 6 o'clock in the, you know, evening would ever have done while I was in the Marine Corps. It took so much away from my kids, and they were so young and they were so innocent. And that's what I had to live for, but I was so numb, and I had let all this stuff in that had prevented me from being able to maintain that relationship with not only my kids, but my wife.
That's rough.
Yeah, it was not a fun time. There were times where, go ahead.
No, I was just going to say, because I'm going to give you a second to breathe, because I can tell
you're
unpacking a lot. So I understand it. Palms are sweaty, all this stuff.
Yeah.
But when a man loses his mission, and this, I strongly believe in this, when a man loses his mission, he loses his values. Like, yeah. For you, your mission was, you know, at the time, it's like it's the Marines, but then you have this family. When you lose your mission, you lose your values. When you lose your values, you don't have anything to fight for.
Yeah.
And when a man doesn't have anything to fight for, he fights himself. And that's where you were at. And I understand 100%. It 100%, because I was there as well, going through my divorce. And it's like the self-pity. It was all self-induced on myself. I was doing it all to myself. And I took precious time away from my kid that I'll never get back. But that's why we're doing what we're doing, right?
Yep.
That's why you're doing what you're doing. This is why you're on here and you're talking about it. So it's, how many boys do you have?
I have three.
You got three boys.
And two girls.
And if they were ever in this situation that you're in right now, it's like, I went through it, so hopefully you don't have to go through it. And I've unpacked what I've unpacked, and I've learned what I've learned, so that, and I mean, in the chaos of the world, it's still trending in the wrong direction. So there's a possibility that one of your kids is going to be in this situation, or one of your daughters is going to be married to a guy who gets booted from the Marines based on something, right? And it's like, no, Dad's been through this, and this is what I've learned, and that's what this is.
Yeah.
So you get back home from Maryland after the road trip.
So I get back home and I'm just in this numbing and just lucid state of being. I had attempted to, you know, unalive myself on a handful of occasions, but I never fully committed. That's just how dark things got. I couldn't tell you how many like holes I had to patch in my walls, because I would just get so angry at not only myself, but what the situation was. And I was angry at God, and I was just, you know, all this stuff from the time I was 4 years old all the way up until the time, you know, I was 27 years old when that muscular thing happened.
Mm-hmm.
So this is a very like short time frame in the scheme of things, but a third of my life, basically. You could call it a midlife crisis, but I mean, everything had built up to this point, and it all was like bottled up. And I had let go of some of it. It was like you kind of crack the top to let the steam out, and you put the top back on. And that's what I was doing over the years. And then this next 3 years was just me completely just imploding. There was no like bottle to put a lid back on at this point. And, you know, basically I had killed my relationship with my wife. There was a point, like, I had made a promise to my wife from the very get-go. My parents were divorced, and it was one of the most horrendous things I ever went through as a child.
Yep.
You know, minus the other stuff I went through. But up until that point, I made a promise to my wife, and she made a promise to me that we would never divorce one another. And I know everybody's going to give me crap about that. Well, you can't make promises. Well, here's what I'll leave you with on this. You can make those promises, because that's your goal, or that's your mission with that marriage or whatever commitment you made with your spouse. If you make that in the beginning, you better stick to it. That's your mission. But I will say that there is a big misconception about the society that we live in now, where if something's broke, most people, especially, you know, the men that I know, they never invested the time to fix it.
Mm-hmm.
They would just go out and get another one.
Yeah, if your TV's broken, instead of trying to fix it, it's cheaper, quote-unquote.
And I know divorce is, sometimes, it's needed. Like, if you're complete, like, there, I've heard stories where guys are like, look, I tried to fix it, but she wouldn't do anything. Mm-hmm. And vice versa, you know, the husbands wouldn't do anything. You're kind of at a point where, like, that's a needed thing then, if that's what you see fit. But I'm not judging anybody on the whole divorce thing. But for me personally, I had made a commitment to my wife, like, divorce was not an option. We were going to work through the good, bad, and the ugly.
Respect it.
And it was rough. There were a couple times where divorce was really like just a thin sheet of paper away. Like, that's how thin the membrane was of making that decision with the things that were going on. So, you know, I had gone through all this, and then finally, on a whim, I had met a guy that lived down the road. I found out he was a Marine. He's like, hey, man, you should go to this therapist that I know. And I'm like, all right, cool. He gave me your information. And I owe a hell of a lot to this woman. She helped me find the shovel to dig myself out of my own hole I was in. And she led me to figure out how to fix all this and how to deal with it. Basically, her name is Dr. Mary Veaton. She runs a program. I forget the name of it. Dang it. I'll tell you the program's name when I think of it. But she runs a program where she was basically in the Navy. She used to, you know, prescribe medications to people till one day she started researching the drugs that people use for, you know, PTSD and depression, anxiety, all this. And she come to find out it's nothing but a money thing.
It's nothing
but a money thing. And, you know, I'm probably going to upset a lot of people about this, but I would guarantee that word of caution, like, if you've been taking something for a very long time, you need to work with a doctor on it's called titration. How to titrate off of that drug. You cannot go cold turkey on some of this stuff. It'll kill you. Like, So word of caution on that. She had basically convinced me to take all, basically take a look at all the medications that I had and get off of them. And that's what I did. I got off all the medications I was on over time. This took, you know, I think it took almost a year, year and a half to get off of all of these. Cause some of them were making my brain feel like someone was sticking a cattle prod to it. And I was getting like tased when I would start to come off of it. And I called them brain zaps. So anyways, she convinced me to get off the medications, and then she convinced me, she was the therapist that convinced me to go to AA meetings, and I wasn't an alcoholic.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I was a weedaholic. I don't know. But she said, no, you need to go to AA. And I'm like, I'm not going to AA. And she's like, no, you need to go. I've got a guy I'm going to hook you up with. So I ended up going to the AA by the, I want to say second, maybe third meeting. I had this Irish guy that was going there, and he was this mean, mean Irish dude. But he was a real nice person. I'll say that. He just, his demeanor, like, you didn't want to mess with him. And then I had this other guy. He was a chief in the Navy. No, I forget if he was a senior chief or whatever, you know. But anyways, these two guys came up to me after one of the meetings. And mind you, I'm still smoking weed at this point. Like, I'm just kind of like my last little hurdle of getting off of everything.
These two guys came up.
Yeah, yeah. They smell my bullshit too.
Yeah.
These two guys came up to me and they basically cornered me in a parking lot, which, you know, you can't really corner someone in a parking lot. There's plenty of space around. I felt cornered. And they came up to me and they said, "Hey, so what's this whole marijuana thing? Are you still smoking it?" And I was like, "Yeah, I am. I need it." And they're like, "You don't fucking need it. Are you a fucking bitch?" And I'm like, whoa, I haven't heard this in a while. Like, yeah. This is bringing me back to the Marine Corps. Like, this is, you're speaking my language. So, you know, excuse my French, but I'm just trying to, like, show you what it took.
Yeah.
I basically had these two guys corner me in a parking lot, and they said, "Cut your bullshit. Stop lying to us. Where's it at?" And I'm like, "What do you mean?" And they're like, "Don't stop playing stupid. You said you vape it. Now, where's your vape? We know you got it on you." And if they were bluffing, whatever, but I had it. It was in my pocket. They're like, "Take it out." And I was like, "All right." And I took it out. And they said, "Smash the fucking thing right in front of us right now." I'm like, "No, I need." They're like, "Shut the fuck up and crush it right now." And I'm like, "Whoa." So I was like, "All right, cool. Like, I don't want to get my ass beat. Like, I did not expect AA to go this way. But for me, that's what I needed." And I'm not saying all AA is like this, but that's what I needed. And because I was one of those guys that was like, I could sit here and talk to somebody and really convince them otherwise kind of thing. And they kind of caught on to that.
Yeah.
So they were like, "No, we're going to take you completely out of your element." Because I can deal with conflict. I can deal with, you know, that stuff. Because it's kind of like where I grew up in the Marine Corps. But these are two complete strangers. Like, I come to find out later, this one guy supposedly murdered somebody. I'm like, "Nah, I'm good. I'm so glad I smashed that in the parking lot." Well,
those are two guys that cared about you in that moment. Like, that's the stuff that Dave and Cobra talk about.
They did. They were shown,
you know, you need that that person to just kind of rip you up and shake you.
Yeah. And that was the beginning of a journey of sobriety right there. They basically made me smash it. I quit. I quit smoking.
Sobriety
it.
Part two, if you think about
it. Yeah, sobriety part two. But right. I'll tell you, something happened later on. But basically, they got me to quit. I stopped taking my medications that the VA had tried to pump into my veins, which were making my condition worse. I stopped smoking the marijuana. My mental health improved dramatically. I started going to the AA meetings for several months afterwards. I didn't stick with it because it came to a point where I was like, you know what? I feel like I'm really stable. Like, I've been stable for a while. So eventually I stopped going. I was still talking to my therapist and stuff. And then eventually the next thing I know is I started to regain like a purpose. I started to regain, like, at this whole 3 years, I didn't have a job. My wife was working a job, but basically she was paying for my habit of smoking marijuana. So all that money that she was making was going towards my addiction. Yeah. And then I got a job. I started becoming real successful with it. But I started to let my guard down. and I started to get into this whole individual thing. And what I'm leading up to is what got me through all of this and the points I'm going to leave everyone with. But then I got back into the whole drug thing. And it was something that I thought was innocent. I started to take the stuff that you could go to basically any like of these tobacco stores or whatever I call them, smoke places, the smoke shop, mm-hmm. whatever. I started taking, I forget what it's called, Kratom. And it's basically to help with pain. Mind you, I'm still suffering with pain. I'm still suffering with chronic head to toe pain every waking day. But it got to a point where I was using these different types of therapies, these different techniques and stuff that helped me to push myself through it. So I did that again. And then one day I bought a whole big bottle of them and I stuffed them under my seat in my car. And
you're trying to hide it.
Yeah, I was trying to hide it because I was going to, mm-hmm. you know, do what all good addicts do. They have hiding places and they keep secrets from everyone. Yeah. Don't be dumb, addicts that are out there. We all know. I know.
Mm-hmm.
I know you got a secret stash somewhere. Yep, feel guilty about it. I do too. But anyways, like I had hit the brakes one day and my wife was in the car and this bottle rolled right out underneath my feet while I'm driving. And I'm like, damn, busted.
Mm-hmm.
So she caught me. And she made me take them to CVS and throw them away. And they're like the medicine drop off places where you can throw medicine away. She made me walk in there and dump the whole bottle in there. And she basically called me out. She made me go back to going to like talking to my therapist again. And then my therapist had convinced me to go back to AA. And I was like, no, I'm not doing it. I didn't go back. But anyway, I started talking to her. I went to her course that she has. It's called War Fighter Advanced. So it's a really good organization, but they work with veterans and first responders and stuff like that. I also attended the Mighty Oaks program, which is a faith-based program. But I highly recommend for anybody who's really going through the thick of it, they will pay your way. They'll pay your plane ticket. They'll pay everything for you to stay for a week, and they will teach you how to get out of this funk you're in. So I went to both of those on separate occasions. And then I got to a point where I just kept doing the things I knew that were going to help me in a positive manner. I kept going and making sure I had a purpose. I was, you know, I had a job and it, you know, it wasn't something like I was making $100,000 a year with. It was just something it was keeping me preoccupied in a productive way. I started to, you know, I did college. I did stuff to keep my mind active. I was trying to do things with my children. I was trying to teach them all these cool things that I learned while I was in the Marine Corps and I was camping with them and stuff. So I started rebuilding that relationship, rekindling that relationship. And I owe a lot of it to one, going to therapy. The most respect that I will ever give to any man in this world is a man who can be vulnerable. And I know that sounds like so taboo, but I will tell you this. I have more respect for a man that will tell me, hey, man, I need help, than I do for a man who hides it behind closed doors and drinks it down with a bottle or even a pill and doesn't tell anyone about it and causes a nuclear bomb to go off with everything in his life, from his relationship with his kids, his wife, his friends, work, whatever. I have more respect for someone that will say, hey, man, I need help, than I would a man who sits here and hides it and acts like everything is okay. That was the biggest thing that I had learned. And this is something that I would tell somebody, especially my kids. If you feel like you're going down that road, I always tell them this, and I've been teaching them this since I've gotten through most of this. I keep telling my children, you have only two choices. That is it. And they're like, what do you mean, Dad? And I'm like, look, it's very easy to think about. There's a right way to do something, and then there's a wrong way. That's it. That is the two paths you can take. That is it with everything. And you can put that into any aspect of life, whether it's, you know, should I drink a bottle of alcohol to kind of help myself get through this week that I just had? Or should I go to that men's group that's on Friday that prepares me for the weekend so I don't make stupid mistakes?
Mm-hmm. Yeah,
you know, it takes a village. And, you know, going to the AA meetings was very helpful. Talking to other people that were going, the stories I heard in there, man, like, you think my stories are bad. Like, some of these people, you have no idea.
Like, it's wild.
It's humbled me. Mm-hmm. And I thought, you know, my case is pretty bad. And I'm pretty sure most people are like, I don't know, bro, your case is pretty bad. Like, listen, I've been through it, but you have no idea what anybody else has gone through. You have absolutely no idea. The biggest things that helped me was finding relationship with other guys that were able to kind of pull me out of my nonsense that I was in. And just to be there, like, just to be there to just kind of, like, get it off your chest. So I went to the AA meetings. My therapist was teaching me, like, how to do different meditation. And, you know, you can think I'm going hippy-dippy on you, but listen, this is what worked for me. Might not work for you. It might not. I don't know. Started doing meditation. I did cold water therapy. Have you ever done ice plunges? Holy crap. Ice plunges, man. You talking about, like, if you feel like mentally you're struggling, go and put yourself in some 35 degree cold water. You won't think about nothing. your rushing thoughts will soon vacate. Do it for 3 or 4 minutes. You'll reset real quick. You know, I was doing cold water therapy. I was doing cold and hot therapy where I'd get in a shower and turn the cold water on and then hot water. That was helping me a lot, especially with the pain that I was going through. I was doing acupuncture. And mind you, I don't like needles. You know, I got tattoos for days, but when you're putting a needle in me and leaving it there and I can't move or scratch my nose, like, I'm freaked out, especially considering the whole Bahrain incident too. But I was doing acupuncture, massage therapy, chiropractic, CBT, which is cognitive brain therapy. That's a tough one. If you haven't done that, talk to a doctor to get you set up with that. I owe a lot of credit to also the Semper Fi Fund. The Semper Fi Fund helped me through a lot of this too. And it's all about just grabbing, just everybody plays this whole, and I did it. And when I say everybody, I say this generally, but for me, I played this whole victim mentality. Woe is me. No one's going through what I'm going through. No one can relate. Yep. But I guarantee you, just hearing what I've said about my story, I could probably connect with someone that's watching this video in one way, shape, or form. And, you know, there's some things I didn't discuss through this, but, you know, those are some things that are really personal to me. But, you know, it's all about having that village, having that community of people, not feeling like you're alone. You know, pick up the phone one day and just call somebody random that you know. Just randomly reach out to them. You never know what that conversation would turn into. You know, besides that, I was doing the CBT therapy. There was this new thing that was coming out at the time. It was called TMS. TMS is transcranial magnetic therapy. So, I probably screwed the acronym up, but it's called TMS. It uses magnetic therapy to kind of help change the way your brain waves are working. I was using this device that TRICARE actually paid for. It's called the Alpha Stem. That helped me with my pain and my general anxiety and depressive disorder. You know, don't play this whole alone game. There's so many resources out there that I think a lot of people don't take advantage of to get them through the tough stuff that they're going through. I basically kind of, my life was what made me who I am today. And I know it sounds cliche. You've probably heard that 1,000 times over. I would never, if I was afforded the opportunity, I would never get into a time machine and try to go back to change any of it.
Mm-hmm.
And some people will look at me like I'm crazy. I am a little crazy. I joined the Marine Corps and, you know, whatever. But I would never change it because that is what molded me. That is what shaped me. That is what chiseled me into the person that I am today. And I don't want you to think I'm perfect. I don't want you to think that I've got all my ducks in a row right now. I don't. I've been going through the thick of it. Last year was absolutely horrible for me. I mean, last week was horrible for me. It's the biggest thing I want to leave people with, like hearing my testimony. I know it's taken 3 episodes to get through it, but good Lord, probably write a small mini series about it. I don't know. But the biggest thing I want to leave people with that I've learned is, one, don't go at it alone. Get, grab your balls with one hand and grab your phone with the other and call somebody, anybody. I guarantee if you told that person that's on the other line, unless they're an absolutely horrible person, one, you probably shouldn't be calling that person, but two, I guarantee that they will do something for you, or at least try. If you come at them vulnerable and you say, hey, look, I need help. You've got to have some perseverance. Perseverance is by far one of my favorite words. And it is basically, like we used to say when I was serving, embracing the suck. Even though life is throwing all these flaming arrows at you, and you got all this stuff going on, you've got to look at what is present. What presence do you have? Not only the present moment, but what presence do you have? You know, you've got the gift of your children. You've got the gift of your wife, who hopefully she's supporting you. You've got the gift of, man, I've got a job. Man, I've got a car I can drive in. If you only knew the people that are out there that can't say they have those things. There are people that don't have a car. There are people that don't have a home over their head. Like, you've got it made if you have a house, a car, a loving wife. You know, even if you fight with her, you know, I fight with my wife all the time, not physically, you know, sometimes we do, but you know how that turns into. But, you wonder why we have so many kids, but, I'm sorry, Cameron. I know you're you got virgin ears on you. I'm sorry. But, you know, you got to look at what's present. You got to have the perseverance of knowing, like, I'm going to get through this. I just got to make sure that I don't make these things bigger than what they are. And it could be a significantly huge thing going on in your life. I'm not discrediting that. But see it as a moment to say, you know what? This is a hard reset that life has put me through. What can I learn from this, and what can I do to get myself out of it? Who do I need to talk to? Do the 5 W's. Who, what, when, where, why? You know, whatever you got to do. You know yourself better than anybody else out there. No doctor is going to tell you that your leg is broken. They're not going to come to your door and say, hey, you broke your leg. You need to come to that doctor and say, hey, I broke my leg. Then they can start fixing you, helping you fix yourself, whatever the case may be. And the same thing goes for the people that are out there that are going through the struggle. You know, you got the perseverance. You got to push yourself through it. But you also got to find purpose. You've got to find purpose, and whatever that purpose is, I think I've said it in the first episode, was even if it's just waking up in the morning and saying a 5-second prayer, God, help me through this day. Amen. Like, there's your purpose right there, getting through the day, relying on God. You know, don't rely on this stuff that you know is going to push you to the end, to the edge. You know the stories, you know the things that have gotten people where they are. You know the downfalls. Don't get yourself into that position. You know, that's what's worked for me. But man, there's 1,000 ways to skin a cat. If you own a cat, don't take that literal. But you know what I mean. Like, you gotta.
Well, it's one of the questions that I had before from somebody was like, what if you have a guy that doesn't have a wife and they don't have the community around them, and it's if you're thankful for the things that you have inside of you, like for me,
yeah,
it got to a point where initially it's like I reached out to these guys, these friends, and they were like, I can't be there for you, or they wouldn't be there for me. So I started like cutting people out.
Yep.
And my list got really slim really fast. But that's something that I learned really quick was you don't need, we've beat this in, over our heads, you know, a million times. You don't need 1,000 guys. You need just 5 nasty sons of bitches.
Yep.
And you can take over the world. That's one. But number two, and this is in the last 2 years of myself, it's like, I have cars, I have a house, I have all of these things, but like I don't need any of that stuff. I have breath in my lungs. And that's when it started to evolve into self-love.
Yep.
Started to respect my time, respect myself, and put up a lot of real healthy boundaries. Like I have air in my lungs. There's somebody right now within this city of Alexandria, Virginia that I live in. They're on their deathbed right now.
Yep.
There could be a kid. I mean, there's kids at 8 years old, they have cancer, and they're dying right now. They don't have air in their lungs. So it's like, I have air in my lungs, and that's what I'm thankful for. Everything else, it's a facade.
Yep. And you pretty much, oh, no, go ahead.
It's funny you, go, no, you're good, man. I got, I know.
So you pretty much wrapped up all the questions I had. The next thing was going to be where you're at now, but, yeah, that was a badass wrap up of everything. It's phenomenal. Yeah. Yep.
I appreciate it. I'll be honest with you. Where I'm at now is I have this, I always think of things in like the military sense of things. Cause that was my first job, you know? And if you've ever heard of junk on the bunk, you know, we called it junk on the bunk. For those who don't know what that is, it's basically, it's like you take everything that you have that you need for whatever mission, whatever field op, whatever it is, you take everything that you have, they give you a list and they say, this is what you need from your Kevlar down to your socks, down to your skivvies, whatever. And you lay it all on the bed and you have it right out in front of you. And then somebody comes by and they inspect to make sure you got everything that you need. That is how I see my life now. I've done this junk on the bunk inspection and I have all this gear that I've neatly packed up and I've put it in my pack. And sometimes I need it, sometimes I don't. But I have all these things now, these resources, these tools, whether it be people, whether it be, you know, knowing that if I, you know, I got an ice bath for Christmas. I have been in that ice bath every night since Christmas. And mind you, it is not fun. Like I'm breaking 2 or 3 inch thick ice to get in it on some nights, but I sit in there for 3.5 to 4 minutes and it's 32 degree water. It's freezing. But when I get in there like that, that right there is what's helping me know, like, look, if you're able to truck through 4 grueling minutes of sheer agonizing, I always think of the people that were on the Titanic. Like these people were in 30 degree water, like they died of hypothermia. And I got to looking it up. I was like, you know, if the water is 32 degrees, how long would you survive? And it was like, from 5 to 15 minutes, you're going to be dead. And I was like, okay, I'm going to say about 4. 4 minutes is good for me. There have been some nights where I've gotten so cold, I get up and everything just tunnel visions. So, you know, don't get that extreme with it. But, you know, that's what's working for me now. I have all these things that I know I can pull out of my rucksack. I have all these guys' phone numbers, whether I talk to them every day or not. Like, if I need something, I always go to who's nearest to me. If you have a supporting wife, go to them. If you have a supporting dog, like, I know a lot of guys who have service dogs, like, that is their person. That's who they go to. You know, if it's your kids, just put the crap down, forget about everything that's going on in your life and just go hold your kids, go give them a hug, whatever. For the people that don't have the wife, that don't have the kids, don't feel bad for yourself because it explicitly says in the Bible, and you can look the verse up, I forget what it is, but I think it was Paul. He was talking about, you know, it was Jesus actually. Paul reiterates it later. Jesus was like, look, it's better for you not to be married. And he was basically saying, look, when you get married, you got not only yourself to deal with, but also another. and you're becoming one person. So now you're going to have to work out two things. So if, hey, if you're single, you know, you're blessed in a way that you don't understand, because now you have some peace of mind knowing, hey, look, I can do things without having to worry about having to, you know, consult with the wife if I can do this, or have to worry about what's going on with the kids' life and stuff. But for the guys that are out there that feel like they're alone, that are living these lives where, you know, you go home to your apartment and it's just you and your Xbox or your PlayStation, and that's pretty much it. You don't have anything else. Do not feel alone. You know, if you say you do play video games, get on there and chat with one of your friends that you play with often and say, hey, where do you live? You know, figure out, they might be a street or two down from you. They might be another city away, but hey, you have that person. Talk to those guys. I mean, just grow some balls. Grab your balls and say, I'm a man, and call somebody and just talk to somebody. It doesn't have to be another man. I mean, it could be your mother. Like, depending on the relationship that you have with that person, you know, use your own judgment, but don't feel like you're alone. And even if you ain't got nobody else to call, there are so many resources out there that people don't utilize.
There's a lot.
Yeah.
And that's one of the goals through like Stripped Raw, everything that we have was, I mean, even 988, I mean, there are phone numbers all over the place. There's so much money that our tax dollars are going to for these resources. Absolutely. There's, even if somebody doesn't want to talk to a therapist because they see it as taboo, there's 1-800 numbers to veterans. There's like Vietnam War veterans in a call center right now, 24/7 staffed all the time. Mm-hmm. And it's like we suffer in silence, and we shouldn't have to. There's so many resources out there.
Yeah. I think the biggest thing, I was trying to remember what I was going to say before Cameron said what he was going to say, but it's all right. It's amazing what happens when you go from a moment of where you're telling yourself all these negative things. Like, once you get to a point where you are nothing but negative, or if you're in the midst of being in a spot where, like for myself, like I'm ready to end it all. And for the sake of the video and, you know, all this stuff on YouTube and stuff, you know what I mean. When you get to that moment, dig down deep, even if you only got 1% left, dig down deep and do one positive thing. Whether it's telling yourself that you are okay, that you're enough, that your past has no control over you anymore. That's why it's called the past. You're presently breathing. You're presently able to get up and take a couple steps to go make a phone call. You're able to get up and change your circumstance because you're able to, you're present, you're here. You won't be if you choose that other route.
Sure.
You know, and it's
absolutely,
that's where you need to get yourself, and you just push all of that other stuff to the side if you can. I know it's tough. There's been moments where I didn't want to. Thank God my wife was there during those moments. You know, that was the person I owe a lot of credit to as well. You know, my wife for this, and my kids. You know, in those moments, those dark moments I was in, I really had to think, man, I cannot imagine the impact that my decision will have on my kids if I choose to do this.
Yeah.
What is Absolutely. It going to turn into them for when they're my age?
Yep.
That right there is where it hits me in the heartstrings. That hits me in a spot deep in my soul that no.
That well, decision you went from a place never, where you,
yeah.
Yeah, you didn't have your mission, and then you found your mission again with your kids.
Yeah.
Yeah, it was the same thing with me.
Yeah. That's what I was going to say. We were talking about this whole materialistic thing and talking about the houses and the cars and the kids and, you know, all this. This is what I've told so many people. I always tell people this. Our society, especially like the Western culture society, we're very materialistic, hustle bustle, always got to be making money, always got to be doing the next best thing, always trying to top the other person. You know, that's the culture we live in, and that is the complete opposite of what we should be living. And this is what I'll kind of end it with. If you live in a house, and if you have pets, and if you have, you know, a nice TV, and if you have a PlayStation, and if you have, you know, a wife and dog or whatever, you have all these things. I want you to think of this, and I do not wish this on any person, because this is a horrible thing that could ever happen to any family, especially with the recent things that's been going on in LA with the wildfires and stuff. I want you to think about this scenario. My home is in a blaze of fire right now. What is the first thing that I am grabbing? And I want you to really think long and hard on this, because it's not going to be your TV. It's not going to be your Xbox. It's not going to be your, you know, $3,000-$4,000 worth of guns, whatever. If you have a dog, if you have a kid, if you have a wife, those are the first things you're grabbing. And that's the only thing that you really want to leave out of that house with.
Mm-hmm.
That's your purpose right there. That is the only thing that matters in this life, is one, having relationship with others, and two, if you do have others in your life, building those people up. And not, I'm not saying to, you know, hover parent them or whatever. It's to prevent them from making the same mistakes that you did, but with a form of humility and grace, knowing that they may make that mistake, but at least you said, hey, look, this is how I got out of it.
Yep. No judgment.
Mm-hmm.
No judgment.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. No, because I agree with you 100%.
Yeah. Because if my kid came up to me after he got out of the house or whatever, he came up to me and he looks like he's 90 pounds soaking wet. He's got scars all over his arms from being a heroin addict. I've never done heroin. Good God almighty. I'm terrified of the big drugs. But if he came up to me and said, Dad, I need your help. I'm going to do everything in my power that I possibly have to help him.
Mm-hmm.
I am not going to sit here and blame him. I'm not going to sit here and, you know, chastise and judge him. I'm going to say, God, man, I'm so glad you came to me and not someone else.
Yep. That's it. Absolutely.
You know, that's how I live my life. And that's how I've, from 4 years old till now, that's how I've gotten through life. And I see it as a blessing that I've went through these things. Yep. Had I not gone
complications.
Through them, and a lot of complications, but it made me who I am, and I'm grateful for it. And I have this toolkit. I have a phone. I have all these things that I can look at, and I know how to get myself out of it. And I know the signs of when I'm starting to go down that other trail.
Yeah, and absolutely.
If everybody out there listening,
this is what we do.
That's been my journey. That's been Preston's journey.
And we can't thank you enough for sharing that. Like, I don't know. I couldn't imagine when I called you throwing this wild curveball to see if you'd be interested in biting on that this would be what would come from it. But man, just incredible.
Yeah, these last three episodes have been awesome. I appreciate your vulnerability and everything. It's been dope.
Yeah, man. No,
things are obviously treading in a very good way for you, which is awesome. Self-discovery. And that's what we do with all of this. It's getting the stories and letting it, just like you said earlier, Preston, it's like, raise your hand, be vulnerable. There's no judgment here. That's what these communities are for. And that's what we're embracing.
Everybody's afraid of the big V word. The vulnerable word, because
we've
got to be a man. You don't cry. Yeah, you do.
Then there's Preston out here ripping his chest open on the internet for us. It's badass.
Yep. It's okay to cry.
Dude, when you called me, when you called me, I was like, oh, God. Like, I've never, like, disclosed all of this in, like, one kind of go.
I didn't know. I only knew a tiny percent. I was like, oh, yeah, I know he's been through some stuff. I'll give him a call. See what happens.
Yeah, well, hope you enjoyed it.
Really can't thank you.
No, it's been a wild ride.
Yeah.
This is exactly what we're shooting for.
Yeah.
All right, Cam.
Well, I hope I set the bar for everybody. Like, no, no pressure.
Yeah, no pressure.
Yeah.
Preston, we appreciate you deeply, brother. We love you.
Absolutely.
Oh, yeah.
All the best. We'll be in touch in the future for sure.
Sounds good, brothers. I appreciate you. All right,
man. Take care.